This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. In 2001, Chris Hadfield made history as the first Canadian astronaut to perform a spacewalk. He made history again a little more than a decade later. In 2013, he became the first Canadian to command a spaceship as commander of the International Space Station. A lot of people will recognize him from a music video he made during that five-month stay on the station, a cover of David Bowie's Space Oddity.
This is ground control to Major Tom. You've really made the grade. And the papers want to know whose shirts you wear. But it's time to guide the capsule if you dare. This is Major Tom to ground control.
Commander Hadfield left the capsule and retired in 2013, but now he has dared to embark on a new kind of odyssey, writing a debut novel. His book came out last week, and it's called The Apollo Murders. It follows the astronauts and ground crew of a fictional moon mission called Apollo 18. Set during the Cold War in the late 60s and early 70s, the story features secret assignments, espionage, Russian cosmonauts, in-space combat, and of course, murder. It's in the title. Commander Chris Hadfield joins me now to discuss it. Commander, welcome to All of It.
Thank you very much, Allison. It's great to be talking with you today.
So Chris, since retiring, you've published a memoir, a photo book, an illustrated book. A novel is a very different kind of project. What made you interested in writing a novel?
Boy, is it ever. I mean, writing a novel? Holy cow. If you're writing a factual book, you know, it's kind of tidy and things have a natural start and finish. But when you set out to write a thriller fiction novel, it's so open-ended and it can go anywhere and it all has to come from the inside of your own head. It was a real challenge, but I thought it would also be a fun challenge, but also maybe a way to let people in on the real visceral human nature of flying in space. How does everybody react when you have a bunch of people in a crew? I could write in everybody's dialogue and what was going on inside their own heads and the silly stuff and the dangerous stuff and how everybody, you know, responds to all that. So it gave me a lot more freedom to truly tell what it's like to fly in space. But in this case, all the way out to where there's at least, well, there's a plural in the title, to where there are at least two murders that happen.
The story follows a group of American military on what's ostensibly a moon mission, but behind the scenes is a secret mission to spy on the Soviets. Which choice came first, the Cold War setting or the idea for the spy thriller plot?
Actually, the very first thing that came, Allison, was the title. And it was my my British publisher said, hey, I've seen some of the stuff you've written, you know, offline, and I think you could write a thriller fiction, and I've got an idea for you. I'm calling it The Apollo Murders. What do you think? And so all I really had was that title, but it's very clarifying because Apollo, all right, so it's got to be between 1967 and 73 or so, and murders, plural, so I got to kill at least two people. So I'm like, how am I going to do that? What possible motivation could be strong enough to be worth murdering somebody for? You know, whether it was a nationalistic agenda or someone's personal agenda. And so then I just started digging through those years looking for when would be a good time. And if I didn't want to do it with an existing Apollo mission, because that would have just made it all false. But by flying Apollo 18, which Nixon had canceled, and making it be paid for largely by the Air Force, which was what happened with the space shuttle, that suddenly let me put a military crew on and give them a different set of objectives. And the Soviets at the time had a secret spy space station for real called Diamond, which in Russian is Almaz. And the more I dug into it, the reality of what was going on in the spring of 73, the more I realized, holy cow, there's so much room for, you know, because there was that spy space station. There was a Soviet rover on the moon that was exploring a place we'd never been before. Both of those things in real life mysteriously malfunctioned in the spring of 73 and quit. So it's like, okay, there's permission. That's where I'm going to stick my story. And then I just needed to build all the characters and squeeze it in and bring it all around to the big crescendo climax of the story in the action at splashdown just north of Hawaii. And it was so much fun, like some big jigsaw puzzle where I was finding and making the pieces and putting them all together.
You know what? That whoever the publisher or editor is knows you well. Because at the top, you said when you're writing a nonfiction book, you just kind of go down rabbit holes and you figure out information. So he gave you a really good prompt because he leaned into your ability and interest in research. And then that helped spark the ideas.
And I love research. I mean, obviously, as a test pilot, and I was a test pilot with the U.S. Air Force and the U.S. Navy. Oddly enough. And then as an astronaut, of course, your whole life is about getting ready to go do a dangerous thing. And the getting ready part is really just homework and study and practice and try and gain your skills and get ready and anticipate, you know, the things that are going to fail. And so this was the same process, you know, okay, I'm going to try and write a fiction thriller novel. How do you do that? So I studied and read books about it. Stephen King's book on writing is really good. And James Patterson did a master class. I've done a master class on exploration, but James, the master of it, did one on writing. And he's such a good fiction thriller writer. Anyway, and then I read multiple books again that I'd read before. But now, you know, picking apart, how did, you know, Conan Doyle write for Sherlock Holmes, or how did Ian Fleming write for Bond, or how does Jonathan Kellerman write for Alex Delaware, or whoever, Tom Clancy or Ken Follett? You know, what are the mechanics of how do they choose a bad guy and a good guy and a protagonist, and how do they punctuate? You know, like how do you write a sentence for someone and make each sentence sequential? I had to learn all that stuff. Just like learning to fly or learning to fly a spaceship. So the research side of it and uncovering all of the stones of fact in order to trickle my story through, it really suited me. And I think it made the story a lot more fun.
My guest is Commander Chris Hadfield, retired Canadian astronaut, current novelist. The name of the new book is The Apollo Murders. Chris, would you read a passage for us?
Sure. Let's see. What shall I read? Let's see. Do I have a page mark? I know. I'll just read the start because it's really compelling, my prologue. And by the way, there was just a terrific write-up recently in the Times of London, the Sunday Times. Mm-hmm. I couldn't believe it. They wrote a great review of this book. Okay, so this is how the story begins. Actually, on the page before, it says, many of these people are real. And much of this actually happened. Turn the page. Prologue. Chesapeake Bay, 1968. I lost my left eye on a beautiful autumn morning with not a cloud in the sky. I was flying an F-4 Phantom, a big, heavy jet fighter nicknamed the Double Ugly, with the nose section newly modified to hold reconnaissance cameras. The nose was now bulbous, which meant the air flowed different around it, so I was taking it on a test flight over the Chesapeake Bay to recalibrate the speed sensing system. And I loved flying the Phantom. Pushing forward on the throttles created this instantaneous, powerful thrust in my back, and pulling back steadily on the control stick arced the jet's nose up into the eternal blue. I felt like I was piloting some great winged dinosaur, laughing with effortless grace and freedom in three dimensions. But today, I was staying close down to the water to measure exactly how fast I was going. So there's a little bit of how the style of it's written. And as you can probably tell, something bad is about to happen down close to the water of the Chesapeake Bay. And that helps select my protagonist for the story, Kaz Zemeckis, who then goes on to be instrumental in figuring out who murdered whom on board this Apollo flight.
Yeah, why did you want to begin the book with Kaz? He's, for people who aren't familiar with the book yet, he's a former fighter pilot turned astronaut, suffered an eye injury that forced him to retire from flying, as we heard in the beginning. Why did you want to begin the book with him and be involved with ground control?
Well, imagine trying to write this whole story with just the locked space. It would be the ultimate locked room, right? Three people and two of them die. But I wanted the story to show the real complexity of space flight. it's not just the crew on board, but it's everybody in Mission Control and all the back rooms of Mission Control and the ships that are deployed in the oceans around the world, relaying communications, and the little communications technician in Australia that is up in the middle of the night so that, you know, the Apollo signals can get through. But in this case also, Soviet Mission Control in Kaliningrad, just outside of Moscow, and then, you know, all of those moving pieces, they really show how this actually works and how the crew is just a piece of this, but the crew are the ones who are risking their lives. And so I wanted to have all of those moving parts to give me, you know, room to build the whole plot. And then also I wanted, after having read the other kind of mystery books where like, you know, Jack Ryan or someone, a recurring protagonist, if it was just the crew on board and people died, then it would be a one-off story. But by having Kaz, who has all of the skills, but unfortunately had an injury that now disqualified him medically, now Kaz can be, you know, like Travis McGee or whatever, you know, sort of a Dick Francis recurring kind of protagonist who could potentially maybe reappear in a subsequent serial book. So I was thinking along those lines as well when I made that character up and then injured him right at the get-go.
The name of the novel is The Apollo Murders. I'm speaking with its author, Commander Chris Hadfield. So there's a moment in the book when two American astronauts come in contact with a Soviet cosmonaut who we learn, after she takes off her helmet, is a woman, and they're really surprised. What led you to decide to make that character a woman?
Well, I think most people don't realize how early and influential women were in spaceflight. You know, Valentina Tereshkova flew solo for 3 days in space as the first woman in space. And the character in The Apollo Murders is based on a real cosmonaut called Svetlana Savitskaya. And that real world Svetlana, she was the world aerobatic champion flying aerobatic airplanes. And she was a test pilot in the Soviet Union. And she was a multiple flown cosmonaut in the, you know, about the time, a little later than the Apollo murders. So, you know, if it was all just guys, not only would it sort of be less interesting, but it would also be wrong. You know, it would just sort of sponge out the whole thing and just make it stereotypical, you know, like they did in Gravity, where Sandra Bullock is there, but she's completely incompetent and doesn't know what she's doing. And George Clooney has to keep flying in to rescue her because, you know, and it's just, it's really insulting to the incredibly competent women astronauts and cosmonauts that we have. And so I really wanted to reflect the reality of the time and choose my characters accordingly. And it's completely credible, you know, if you just do the actual research for all of my characters in the book. They're all based on, you know, people that I knew in the astronaut office or people who were busily working at the time in the programs. And I think it just adds, you know, depth and color and reality in a way that people wouldn't be expecting. And I think it's a better book for it.
I want to read a passage in a section about aircraft flights and rocket launches that gets into some really interesting detail where readers can nerd out. This says, the amount of fuel needed to push the Saturn V off the pad was a staggering 3,400 gallons every second. That required fuel pumps with their own jet engines just to spin them fast enough. The rocket ship had five of these jets pumping the kerosene and oxygen into the rocket chambers, where it would mix, explode, and storm out of the 12-foot-tall exhaust nozzles in a 5,800-degree, 160 million horsepower inferno. So what is interesting to you or challenging to you to be right about some of these details of the science that is involved for an audience, for a general audience, no matter how nerdy we may be?
Sure. Well, as an, you know, I'm a Canadian astronaut, although I was in the NASA Astronaut Corps for 21 years. But because I'm a Canadian astronaut, there aren't very many of us. And so the Canadian Space Agency had me back speaking in schools and, you know, Rotary clubs and everything for decades, way more than my share. And so I realized early on that I need to find a way to explain the complexity and the wonder of what's happening in the language of the person that I'm talking to. And, you know, we might, and in Canada, we speak French as well, but even if you speak in English, you know, at various levels of interest or development or age or whatever, people speak the language quite differently. And so it's always been a challenge to try and impart the same sense of fascination and wonder and amazement and thrill that it all gives to me as effectively as I possibly can. And so when I set out to write The Apollo Murders and my other books, I worked really hard to draw on all of that experience to do it just as palpably and completely as I could. And I was just reading one of the official reviews of the Apollo Murders, and they said, you know, there's never been a better telling of what it's like to have ridden or flown a Saturn V to orbit. Or maybe, you know, Mike Collins, who wrote such a great book called Carrying the Fire, mm-hmm. his biographical account of it. So I just, you know, I worked really hard on it, but I'm quite delighted to read that someone found it not just, mm-hmm. you know, factually accurate, but what really sort of at the gut level, this is what's going on, and this is what it means to you, and this is what it feels like while it's happening.
I have to ask, this is an amazing time to have a novel out about space with all the recent attention on Jeff Bezos and Richard Branson and Elon Musk and William Shatner, who traveled on one of Bezos's flights. You know, given all your time in government space program, what excites you about this shift, the privatization, and what concerns you?
What excites me is just how good the technology is now. I mean, everybody's focusing on the big, shiny, very polarizing figures of, you know, Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk and even Richard Branson. You know, you don't get into that position by being a normal person, naturally enough. but they have all been working for 20 years trying to develop a whole new level of space technology. And to me, that's the really interesting part. You know, I get over the transient personality part and recognize that what used to be impossible and then required an entire nation, a trillionaire, to be able to finance, US or Soviet Union. Mm-hmm. Now it's so good and so simple and reliable that we can take an actor safely to space and back. I know Bill Shatner and yeah. I like him, and we've he talked to me while I was in space, and I've done various shows with him. But it just that is opening up space commerce,
yeah.
like we've never considered, and we count on it. You know, GPS and telecommunications, but also for trying to understand climate change in the whole world. It's almost impossible to measure from the surface. But if you can have various little satellites measuring it every day over the whole globe, suddenly you can actually know what's going on and make some better decisions.
And Chris,
We
need the technology. That's a good place to end. Commander Chris Hadfield's new book is The Apollo Murders. Thank you so much for making time today.
My pleasure, Allison. Lovely to talk with you.